harmonize with me and hold me tight all through the night. You're shining bright, I'm your oyster, baby, you're my pearl.
Well, Billy, we're here.
Here we are, Dom.
But where exactly are we? Because this is a completely different setup than most people are going to know about.
And to be honest, it's slightly strange to me because we're in my house. You're in the front room, I'm in the middle room, as I like to call it, because we were sitting together for a second, but Johnny Clues said that we were bleeding into each other's mic, and that was no good, Dom.
Yeah, it sounds painful, and I'm sat with my favourite houseplant of yours, this incredibly healthy pothos plant.
A pothos, is that what it's called?
I think that's what it is, yeah, I think so. And we've been having a heck of a time, haven't we? We've just got off a plane from Calgary and came whistle stop tour to your house to do the podcast. And we went to a convention. We have gone to conventions over the years, you and I and Elijah and Sean, but this is the first time that all four hobbits went to a convention together, which I think is kind of cool, not only for us, but like if I was a fan of a movie and the four kind of, you know, central characters in a lot of ways were at a convention and they'd never done it before, you'd think, right, well, I've got this book or I've got this poster, or I've got this thing and I can get the entire set. That's what I put on Instagram. I was like, come to Calgary and complete the set. And I think a lot of people were very excited to have completed that set over the weekend.
But do you think it kind of ruins the game? You know, like if you got like the 4K box set of Lord of the Rings and then you were going to spend the next 3 years like trying to find the hobbits and get their signatures. And then all you did was you just turned up at Calgary and then, you know, you got them all and then you could go for lunch.
Yeah. Yeah.
You could have it on eBay by the afternoon.
I think some people probably did as well. We did see some really cool artwork though. I don't know if you saw it, but there was a Fellowship crossing, I think, a bridge in Lothlorien or maybe Rivendell in a kind of stained glass vibe. Did you see that?
Really beautiful. And there was a guy who was doing a lot of sort of woodwork, burning the map into like a piece of wood. And then maybe, I think he made the seas and the rivers by some sort of blue magic.
Wow, blue magic. Amazing. Well, yeah, it was great to see the boys. It's interesting. We call the other hobbits the boys, don't we? We refer to each other as the boys. And I think people at the convention started to refer to us as the boys. Where are the boys? Where are you boys going tonight? How are you boys doing? We went to a lovely restaurant in Calgary called Model Milk. I left my jacket.
Oh, so good, wasn't it?
And my credit card. So I'm hoping to get that back at some point. Yeah, it was fantastic.
It was a very good restaurant. So what was it called again? Something Milk?
Model Milk. And we had said, because we're doing a few conventions over the next year or so, the Four Hobbits, we had said, look, we're going to be tired. We might be jet lagged coming in from other countries. Let's try and make sure that at least once in each of these stints of conventions, we go for dinner. So we're one for one right now, and I'm impressed, and we should keep it up.
We're doing amazing. We're doing a great job. And Sean Aston paid, which made it even better.
Well, We should get going with the show because we are having our second part of our fascinating interview with Doug. I don't think there's anything more to say, really. We should just kind of jump into it, right? Should we do
that?
We'll
just let it be the magic of Doug. I found it really interesting. I'm really interested in movement theatre. And in fact, Dom, I don't know if you know this, but I almost went to do a course after I finished drama school. I almost went to Lecoq in Paris to learn about clowning and all that. And so I'm really interested to see what Doug's going to tell us this week.
Yeah, let's bring him on.
Do you find, Doug, that now, because obviously I'm sure Billy and I have the same situation in our own particular kind of acting field, that because you've established that you're very good with prosthetics, you tend to get offered a lot of jobs with prosthetics?
Oh, Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That you know, go-to creature guy, or you know, I've been dubbed with a, I mean, it's a lovely title, the King of Creatures. But you know, I would love to be known for a bit more than that. Especially the older I get. In May I turn 62, I am. Well, thank you. Bless you. But
you look amazing.
So you really do.
As do you. Thank you.
You're not wearing prosthetics but now. No.
Not really. Yeah, this took 5 hours. Yeah, exactly. No, I am hoping to. I'm being more picky with the rubberized jobs that I say yes or no to.
Right.
And exploring more of my human. I've been playing humans all along, just in lesser known roles and you know things that disappear faster. So I would love to. In fact, you know, here's my dream. I want to play the dad of a grown woman on a Hallmark Christmas movie, so I can get just wear like a sweater with reindeer on it, hold a cup of cocoa, and give her some great relationship advice. And that would be
okay. Don't stay with him. He doesn't like cats. Hang out with him. He's a dog person.
He's nicer.
Something like that.
So if anyone from Hallmark is listening, then Doug would like to be in your Christmas movie this year, please.
The woman
no prosthetics.
The woman who loves dogs, brackets, not cats.
Not cats.
That's right.
Exactly.
Well, Doug, you have also you've also carved out a niche for yourself as one of the people that Guillermo del Toro works with consistently, who is just an unbelievably magical filmmaker. So I'm sure a lot of people watching and listening to the show, if they love Peter Jackson's work, have also found their way to loving Guillermo del Toro's work. So could you just talk to us, because I've met Guillermo at a few events and he's absolutely adorable. Can you just talk to us about Guillermo the man, Guillermo the director, what he's like to work with? Because I'm sure people would just eat that up.
Yeah, no, Guillermo del Toro he's my favorite director I've ever worked with. And every other director knows that going in, and they're fine with it because they all love him too. He as an artist, he is, you know, of course, he's a brilliant genius. He has ingested art forms all of his life, and whether it's painting, sculptures, music, dance, theater, literature, film, television, of course, he's taken all of it in, and he has this huge encyclopedia to draw from. He also is such a learner and absorber of people. When he meets you, he has you sussed up within minutes, what makes you tick and what buttons to push to get reactions out of you. And as a director with an actor, that's a brilliant art, you know, gift to have. Mm-hmm. So he directs all of us actors very differently from each other. Even like, you know, when I'm playing opposite Ron Perlman and Selma Blair, we all have different personalities and different things that will trigger a reaction or, you know, or a piece of direction out of us. So he knows how to do that and get into your psyche in a very healthy way though. And just as a person, he is one of the funniest human beings I've ever met. He's very self-effacing. He makes fun of himself constantly and always gets a guffaw laugh out of anyone he's ever in front of. So I just adore the man so much. You know, The Shape of Water was my sixth film with him. And so we've been through a lot together.
So how did you meet him?
1997 on Mimic, his first American feature film ever. I was just called in by the creature effects people like, hey, we're doing some reshoots of this bug character that we already shot in Toronto, but the Canadian actor can't work here in LA. So would I just come in and do 3 days of pickup shoots? Sure. I'm, you know, out of work actor. I think I have time. Yes. So I ended up in a bug costume being directed by Guillermo, who I didn't know who he was at the time. A lot of us didn't. Wow. And he sat down across the lunch table from me on day two and said, so Dougie, tell me everything you've been in before. And we just talked about monsters and creatures and the artists who make them. And he was just this excited 12-year-old fanboy inside a brilliant director, filmmaker.
Mm. Yeah.
I think that's why he has such appeal, is because he makes things that'll give himself a geekgasm. Mm. And then we all get one with him. Mm. I think that's what happens.
There's some mirrors with Peter Jackson, isn't there, with Guillermo? And I know, obviously, they were close to collaborating on The Hobbit together. And
The Hobbit, right. There's a story about The Hobbit then, too. Right. When Del Toro, he was involved, he was living in New Zealand for, a couple of years in preparation of The Hobbit. And I have no idea what happened with why he ended up not directing that. But in the mean, when he was going to be directing it, he told me, "I've got something for you." Never told me what the role was, so I still to this day have no idea what he had in mind.
Was one of my big questions as well. I wanted to know what you were going to be doing in the hub. I read somewhere.
Yeah, but he knew better than to tell me, because he told me this once a long time ago, that I'll never give you too much information before we know what's going to happen, because I don't want to get your hopes up. I don't want you, go into a deep depression when something doesn't work out. So I'm glad, at this point, it's like, okay, that worked out well. But I did meet Peter Jackson behind backstage at San Diego Comic-Con around that same time. And he introduced himself to me. He had lost a whole bunch of weight right before that, so I didn't even recognize him right off the bat. And he introduced himself to me. I'm like, oh my gosh, Peter Jackson. So of course I hugged him. And he said, we've been talking about you a lot, and we'll hope to see you soon. I'm like, yeah, you bet, Peter Jackson. Okay.
That would have been fun. Oh, well. Billy's the same. I sometimes drive over to Billy's place on the west side of a weekend, but I don't tell him unless I'm absolutely categorically coming over.
I get too excited.
He gets really excited. He gets in his gym jams and he starts eating jelly babies and stuff. So sometimes I knock on your door and surprise you, don't I?
Yeah, it's lovely, Tom. Yeah, I love it. Fun.
I know.
Hey, so here's another one talking about that then, Doug, in Guillermo and upcoming movies. I read somewhere that you would be playing, if he makes it, the creature, the monster in Frankenstein. Is that true? Has that made any movement?
Well, it's true without movement, yes. Yeah, I know. I was at the red carpet premiere of Hellboy 2, The Golden Army in 2008. And a journalist on the press line said, "Hey, Doug, I just talked to Guillermo and he said he's going to make his own Frankenstein movie." And I'm like, oh, my gosh, that's great news, because I knew he revered the book and the original film, the Boris Karloff movie. I knew that what that meant to his childhood and all those. So it's like he's the perfect one to make this. He said, well, no, but that's not all. I asked Guillermo who his Frankenstein's monster would be, and he said Doug Jones. That's when I lost all the blood in my head.
Yeah.
First time I'd heard this. Mm. Yeah. So I was just like gobsmacked. And so I went into the theater and watched the movie. And then I asked him later, did I hear this correctly? He goes, oh, yeah, that's exactly what he could have told me before you told the press. I'm just saying. But anyway,
that would be brilliant.
That would be great.
Yeah, but and I was curious at the time, like, would that, because Boris Karloff's Frankenstein was a big, lumbering, broad-shouldered, square-headed thing that I didn't feel like a good fit for me exactly. And so, but come to find out that it was Bernie Wrightson is a brilliant artist who illustrated Mary Shelley's Frankenstein in book form. Mm. And those drawings are what inspired Guillermo to come after me, because they're thinner, more sinewy, more withdrawn and more cadaverous looking. Mm. And it's like, so once I saw those drawings of Bernie Wrightson's, I was like, oh, now I get it. Of course. Look at me. So, but that was 2008, and here we are in 2022, and that has not been made. So where it is, I don't know.
Well, he's a busy man, Guillermo, isn't he? So maybe he'll get around to it.
This is the thing with filmmaking, isn't it? You think it's, if someone like Guillermo says he's going to do that, then everybody would pounce on it. But you just don't know what's happening behind the kind of closed doors. But I'd love to see that film.
I'd love that too.
You'd be a great... the Professor Frankenstein.
Is that the guy who goes, he's alive, alive?
Well, maybe.
Could I do it like that, or should I go lower?
Slightly less, if you could.
I think it's funny, because it's one of the crazy misnomers about, books and or movies, is a lot of people think that Frankenstein is the name of the monster. But that's the name of the Genevan student who creates Frankenstein's monster.
And
Frankenstein's monster, is he just called the monster, or does he have another name? It's not like Dave or Gavin, is it?
I think he calls, in the book, does he call him the creature or the monster? I can't remember.
Is it the arsehole?
No, it's definitely not.
These are good
questions.
I don't know.
But I love the book. I was one of the books I was really surprised that I liked so much.
When we were doing Lord of the Rings, you were reading Bram Stoker's Dracula. Remember?
Which would be another cracking part for you, Doug.
And there's a couple of times that you would stand outside my apartment.
Yeah.
And when I would walk out the door, you'd go...
yeah. Sometimes outside the window.
Yeah. I don't know how you got up there. How did you get up there?
Never ask.
Okay. All right. Doug, can I ask you what your favorite film is?
Ooh.
What's your favorite?
Oh, my. Well, all see, films are just films that Doug was in.
No, of any film. I mean, you can mention one of your own if you're that way inclined, Doug, but just any film.
Okay.
Well, okay. This is going to, I'm going to dip outside the fantasy genre, but slightly, but there's some fantasy. It's a 1980 romantic film with Christopher Reeve and Jane Seymour called Somewhere in Time.
Oh, is it a time traveler's film?
Time travel, yes.
That's one of our favorite genres.
Christopher Reeve sees a portrait of Jane Seymour and goes back in time to find her. It was a lovely, lovely story.
Oh, great. We'll check that out. Love, it's one of my favorite genres.
Oh, it's probably our favorite, isn't it? Time travel. Mm-hmm. And of course, Doug was in The Time Machine, the remake of The Time Machine.
Fantastic.
Which I love that.
Wow.
I love those movies are great.
My mum and dad, hello Momo and Jojo, my mum and dad who spend a lot of time in Spain, I would say probably one of their favorite shared movies was Pan's Labyrinth, which was very much adored. And I watched it recently and it's a lot scarier than I remember. Mm. I slightly shat myself. We'll talk about that on another podcast, Doug.
Okay, that's right.
This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. Life can be overwhelming and many people are burned out without even knowing it. Symptoms can include lack of motivation, feeling helpless or trapped, detachment, fatigue, and more. I'm sure a lot of people out there have been experiencing this, especially as we've been going through this COVID process. It's not been an easy time for anyone. And the feeling of being burned out is something that I think we can all empathize with. We associate burnout with work, but that's not the only cause. All of our roles in life can lead to feeling burned out, and BetterHelp Online Therapy wants to remind you to prioritize yourself. Talking with someone can help you figure out what's really causing stress in your life. BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist, so you don't need to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. It's much more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can be matched with a therapist in under 48 hours. Friendship Onion listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/onion. That's betterhelp.com/onion. Since starting to incorporate Magic Spoon into my daily morning routine, I've noticed fewer cravings throughout the day and more energy to hold me over until lunch. We're all obviously trying to eat better, but a healthy breakfast doesn't have to be boring. Magic Spoon has the amazing flavors that you love, but without all the bad stuff, and it's amazing as a midnight snack right before bed. I also put it in my protein shakes. And here, I'll tell you a few facts. 0 grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, and only 4 net grams of carbs in each serving. Only 140 calories a serving. It's keto-friendly, gluten-free, grain-free, soy-free, and low-carb. You can also build your own box. Available flavors to build your very own custom bundle. A cocoa, fruity, frosted, peanut butter, cookies and cream, maple waffle, blueberry, cinnamon, plus the newly reformulated honey nut flavor that will now be added to Magic Spoon's permanent collection. Go to magicspoon.com/onion to grab a custom bundle of cereal and be sure to use our promo code ONION at checkout to save $5 off your order. And Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. Remember, get your delicious bowl of guilt-free cereal at magicspoon.com/onion and use the code ONION to save $5 off. Thank you, Magic Spoon, for sponsoring this episode.
You can do scary very well, Doug, like Pan's Labyrinth, but also I was a big fan of what you did, and it was just an episode, but in Buffy the Vampire Slayer, I've got 2 favourite episodes, and yours is one of them, because it was really scary and is burned into my mind.
Well, no, thank you. So I'm going to guess, is the other favorite Buffy episode the musical one, Once More with Feeling?
It is, Doug, yeah.
Billy loves a musical.
I love a musical. I love time machines.
And you love Star Trek, and Doug was also in Star Trek. Go. So go on, nerd off about Star Trek. Captain Kirk, Mr. Spock, Scotty, and all those guys.
I do love Star Trek.
Set something to stun.
I love Star Trek. I love the whole universe. And Doug's brilliant in it.
Yeah. Now, were you a Star Trek fan back in the day, Doug? And is there a particular character that you respond to more than anyone else?
Being the age that I am, the original series came on the air broadcast television in 1966. I was 6 years old. Mm. So I grew up with Star Trek. I mean, we've all grown up with some Star Trek in our face at some time point by this time, because the franchise has been around for 56 years now. So Kirk and Spock were my guys, but Spock was the one that I really kind of related to, because he was a little taller, a little thinner. He looked different than everybody else on the bridge. That's how I felt every day when I went to school. So if Spock could do it, so could I. He was inspiring for me. And now being the tall, skinny, odd looking one on the bridge of the Starship Discovery, that's kind of come full circle for me, that I get to play the Spock-like character, even though I'm a Kelpian on the show. But it's when the writers first approached me about being on Discovery, they said, you're kind of going to be the Spock of this series. So I was like, I'm in then. Bring it.
Amazing. Your Star Trek is the one with Patrick Stewart more than anyone else. Is that right?
That was my favorite. Yeah. The Next Generation.
The Next Generation.
That's the one that I really loved. Mm. But I will say how wonderful Doug is, if you don't mind. Then. And here's what I really love about your character on the new Star Trek, Doug, is I think you've brought all that history of all these creatures that you've played, and you've done this lovely thing where it feels like the creature shouldn't be a captain. He shouldn't be as high up as he is. Like whatever world he comes from, there's a feeling of a little bit of, we were talking about imposter syndrome. And even though he's so incredibly elegant and he looks like he should be there, it feels like he's 20 generations too early. Like he's jumped ahead and he's a captain of a starship. And you can see just the way you play him, there's just that, am I supposed to be here? Even though he's incredibly intelligent and makes the right, there's just that, and it's lovely. And you'll like this, Dom.
Oh, you don't know yet.
I know you'll love this.
Well, let's see.
Because as well as that, Dom is a huge fan of animals and nature.
That's true.
There's a nature thing to Doug's character where his species are hunted on their planet. Oh. So they have these sort of another sense that they can tell when there's danger nearby. Mm. So he brings that to the character as well, that there's a little kind of, there's just, you know, it's absolutely brilliant, Doug, and I'd like to applaud you for that.
Let's applaud him.
It's a wonderful performance, it really is. It's really wonderful.
Doug, we have quite a few people asking Billy and I on Instagram and asking us on the podcast, you know, I would like to act. What advice would you give me if I'm at high school or if I'm at college? Is there any particular answer to that question that you give to people who are interested in not only acting, but maybe your particular field of acting, more prosthetic kind of work?
Yeah, when young people are asking that question, they often want to know about the business part of show business, because that's the big mystery is, how do you get in? Is there a phone number I can call to get famous? How does this work? Well, as we know, there's no such phone number. So let me start with the show part of show business. And I think, we're all told going in to know our type so that we don't market ourselves wrong, that we don't bark up the wrong tree when it comes to acting. I knew when I came into the show biz that I was going to be, with my look, I wasn't going to be a romantic leading man unless I was a fish later in a Guillermo del Toro movie. But for now, I have to be either funny or scary. That's what a character actor does. And I knew that going in. So not only just knowing your type, but loving your type. I had to learn to embrace. I grew up hating my look because other kids made fun of me. It's like, well, they must be right then. So I had to, do a 180 on my self-image and actually find the beauty in what others thought were flaws and find the marketability of those attributes that I have. And so knowing my type and loving my type is what really put me forward with some confidence, right? As for the business part, when it comes to creature folks, I think because my career was built on referrals from within the creature effects artist industry, I kind of like sidestepped the casting process. So yes, I have an agent. Yes, I've met casting directors along the way. Yes, I've all of that. But my relationship with those who make the designs that go on me, that's where my career has really been moved forward. So whatever that takes for an actor to put together photos of themselves in different makeups, different looks. If you're in school, get chummy and friendly with those who are in the makeup track of education. Have them work on you. Take photos, take video, put that together, and then present that to creature effects people as you meet them at a maybe like a convention like Monsterpalooza, where they all gather for a weekend every year. And parade yourself around and meet some people. That's kind of the advice I would give for Monster World.
Brilliant. Meanwhile, the secret to your success is you will kiss anyone, won't you?
I will, and I'll also pay for parts.
You have paid for parts. Cash. You don't have any money left, do you?
I don't have any money now.
That's great.
And when you're, what is your secret when you're on the chair? You've just got this chair award. Do you meditate? Do you sleep? What do you do for those hours as these great artists make you into a creature?
All of the above. When you've got hours in a process, it's good to be a friendly person that gets along with people, because those makeup artists are going to be your friends and your caregivers for the entire production. So joking with them, and all of them have been, over the years that I've been working, have been goofy, funny people with great sense of humor, great imaginations. And so we laugh a lot. We tell stories. Might pull up talking cat videos on YouTube if we get a good internet connection. Listen to lots of music. And yes, there's the occasional dozing off for a nap too, of course, if it's long enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, a good relationship with your makeup artist is key, even when you and I are doing, work that doesn't demand a massive amount of makeup, because you're seeing them outside of the person that might be driving you to work. They're the first person that you're having a long interaction with in the morning. So if your relationship with them is not great, it can really kind of be a bad start to your day. And then on the other side of things, if you guys are cool together, it can be the thing that puts you in a great mood. I'm always very keen to be as friendly as possible with my makeup artist and buy her gifts and just say compliments that might not be true, like you look fantastic or what a lovely shirt.
Can I use those compliments?
You want me to write it down later?
Yeah, if you could.
It was what a lovely shirt and you look fantastic, but I'll write it down for you.
Thank you very much.
Keep that on a flashcard. Oh yeah, thanks, Dom.
What a lovely shirt.
And what are you up to next, Doug? Do you know? That's interesting that you mentioned conventions, because I'm going to a convention this weekend. Billy and I are attending, I think, 5 conventions in the next kind of
over
nine
the year.
Months
yeah,
or so.
Yeah.
So we do go to conventions. That's how we meet a lot of people that we hopefully try and invite on our podcast. It's obviously a great way for us to meet people that have enjoyed the work that we do. You seem to do that too. But in terms of work, do you know what the rest of your year might be looking like?
Well, right now I'm on hiatus between season 4 and 5 of Star Trek Discovery. So I'll start that back up like sometime this summer. We're going to be back into filming again. So in the meantime, that's during this hiatus, I was able to work in a movie shoot for Hocus Pocus Part 2. So Bette Midler, Sarah Jessica Parker, Kathy and Jimmy and I are all back from the first movie. Brilliant. With a whole bunch of new kids. And yeah. So, and then I have, I also have a bunch of conventions to do between now and May, that'll all be, I don't know if we're, well, maybe we run into each other. Who knows?
Yeah.
Maybe we could also squeeze in that Hallmark Christmas movie sometime over the summer.
Yeah.
We'll get you a nice sweater.
You can drink coffee. It'll be wonderful. The makeup is 10 minutes in the morning. Oh, you will love it.
Not for you, though, because you play the dog.
I play the dog.
So you're in the chair for 3.5 hours. And dog, you can teach him everything that you know.
Everything I know. Okay, I'll tell you.
Public Goods is the one-stop shop for sustainable, high-quality, everyday essentials made from clean ingredients at an affordable price. Everything from personal care and household products to coffee, toilet paper, shampoo, pet food, and more. Public Goods is your new everything store, thoughtfully designed for the conscious consumer. I use their shampoo. Looks fantastic in my shower. The designs are so simple, so clean, and also smells absolutely fantastic. It's one of my favorite things that I'm currently using. Rather than buying from a bunch of single product brands, Public Goods members can buy all of their premium essentials in one place with one beautiful, streamlined aesthetic. Knowing what's in your product and where they come from is extremely important. They use a membership model to keep costs low and pass on even more savings to their customers. Best of all, you can make your first purchase with no obligation. Join hundreds of thousands of others who have switched to their new everything store. We worked out an awesome deal. Receive $15 off your first Public Goods order with no minimum purchase. That's right. They're so confident that you will absolutely love their products and come back again that they're giving you $15 to spend on your first purchase. You have nothing to lose. Just go to publicgoods.com/onion and use the code onion at checkout. That's PubliGoods.com/onion to receive $15 off your first order. I love that sound. It's the sound of another sale on Shopify, the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. In fact, all of the Friendship Onion merchandise that we sell works with Shopify. It's so easy to set up your business. It takes away all of the hassles, and maybe you feel a little overwhelmed about selling things online. Shopify will take care of all of that for you. Shopify gives entrepreneurs the resources once reserved for big businesses. So upstarts, startups, and established businesses alike can sell everywhere, synchronize online and in-person sales, and effortlessly stay informed. Scaling your business is a journey of endless possibilities, and I love how Spotify has the tools and resources that make it easy for any business to succeed from down the street to around the globe. Like mine, Shopify powers millions of businesses from first scale to full scale. Reach customers online and across social networks with an ever-growing suite of channel integrations and apps, including Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Pinterest, and more. Gain insights as you grow with detailed reporting of conversion rates, profit margins, and beyond. More than a store, Shopify grows with you. Go to shopify.com/onion, all lowercase, for a free 14-day trial and get full access to Shopify's entire suite of features. Grow your business with Shopify today. Go to shopify.com/onion right now. shopify.com/onion.
Oh, and another thing about Star Trek, Dom.
Yeah, go on.
Doug is the first ever alien to be the captain of a starship.
Oh, is it usually a human?
Well, it's in the actual, like, they might meet aliens who have starship, but to be an actual, is that right? Is the alien,
yes,
the lead?
I am the first captain of a title ship in a Star Trek series. Yes, that is an alien, non-human species. Now, mind you, that was just for season 3. I did give up the captain's chair to my human cohort, Sanuka Martin-Green, who plays Michael Burnham on the show. So it's really been her show all along. And this, the audience knows that it was all going to her being captain one day, but I got to be captain in the interim, which puts me in a very small club of Star Trek captains over the decades, which I'm very tickled pink to be a part of now.
Absolutely.
Which I would like to join that club. Yeah. If you could work that out for me, please, Doug. I've noticed the Scots are normally
in the belly room.
They're stuck down in the engine room. I want to be the captain. Yeah. So if you get to do a Christmas movie, I would like to be on the bridge.
Just, here we go, because here's your platform.
Oh, here we go, Tom.
Give us just your reading of, you're flying through space.
Right.
Right. fast. Not that fast, but fast.
We're in warp speed.
We're in warp speed. It's a nice sunny day out. Not a cloud in the sky. But suddenly...
What?
Suddenly to
Klingon,
your...
Klingon! Klingon!
To your left...
Klingon!
Someone says, I think I see Klingons. Go!
Slam on the brakes!
Slamming my man!
Slamming on the brakes!
Now what?
Turn the guns towards the Klingons.
Guns towards Klingons. Set to stun, Captain, or set to blow the
taters
out of them.
Blow the taters out of them.
Press the button.
And... Not yet, not yet. Hold.
Holding.
Hold.
Hovering over the
hold.
Button.
Fire.
I am going to get rid of, I'm going to get rid of my Netflix subscription just to like, just to watch you two all day. That'd be way better.
Right, exactly. I That's mean, the show right there, Doug. And you can do a guest star if you like. We'll pay you tons of money.
That was amazing. I don't often swear, but that was effing amazing. Sorry to use harsh letters there, but that was effing amazing.
Was it too dramatic?
No, it was brilliant.
Was it?
Because I wanted to press the button, and just as I was about
hold. It was like Thingy, that submarine movie, wasn't it, with Sean Connery?
Oh, you were there, The Hunt for Red Septembers.
Oh, lovely film.
Doug, it's been fantastic having you on, and I'm sure a lot of people listening will be inspired about how you have gone on your journey and made some truly extraordinary films in your career. Oh, Billy's got a question, or do you need to pee?
No, I've got a question, Tom. Normally, we do something else on the show. Can we do that?
What?
Billy and Dom eat the world.
Well, I think we're eating the world, but I don't know if Doug's eating the world with us.
I think Doug is eating the world with
us. Hang on, here's Johnny Clues. Hang on, Johnny Clues has answered here.
He's pointing to his phone.
I think Johnny Clues is saying that we might have to do Billy and Dom Eat the World without Doug.
Oh, Doug.
Because, Doug, you don't just happen to have a tuna casserole to your left, do you? No?
No one clued me in that I would have to create. I answered the question on an email, but I didn't know I had to make one for the day.
It sounds like...
Well, so this is what's going to happen.
Right, hold on.
You and I are going to eat the world. This is based on a recommendation from Doug, but he doesn't have it currently with him, but we do. So, Doug, could you tee up your mum's tuna casserole, or the way that your mum used to make it, because it's been made by Johnny Clues, and tell us what we can expect, apart from tuna.
I grew up in Indiana, which is in the Midwest, and a Midwestern staple is tuna casserole, which would be... sort of like egg noodles with tuna, mushroom, cream of mushroom soup, maybe some chopped up onions and some frozen peas in there. It's a big, delicious delight. It's childhood warm, fuzzy comfort food memories for me.
Mm. Well, that is perfect, because what we tend to like with Billy and Dom Eat the World is a food item that means something special to you. So this sounds like it's on brand, as the kids say.
Well, that's fantastic. Thank you, Doug.
Can't wait.
It's been a wonderful conversation. I've really enjoyed it, Doug. And I hope we do meet up sometime this year. I would love to see you again. But if you could just
like
introduce the song that you would like us to hear in Funky for You.
Mm.
I sent two songs. I don't know which one.
We have chosen. Doug. We've chosen the wonderful alliterated Melissa Manchester with the song Through the Eyes of Love.
Well, I'll tell you about that. From the Ice Castles movie soundtrack is a song called Through the Eyes of Love by Melissa Manchester, who I've always loved. And my lovely Mrs. Laurie, who I've been married to for almost 38 years now, we met in college at Ball State University, and that movie was out around that time. That song was on the radio play and in high rotation at that time. And so it kind of became our song.
Oh.
So if someone says, what's a song that means something to you? I would think it would be our song, Through the Eyes of Love by Melissa Manchester.
And did you guys fall in love? Did she fall in love with you, Doug? Or was it the school mascot and those nice, those chicken legs?
Who wouldn't go for a sexy cardinal? Right?
Cardinal calves.
Exactly. One of the beautiful birds. Mm. Well, thank you very much, Doug. It's been an absolute treat.
Yeah, fingers crossed we see you on the convention circuit. But thanks a lot for all of your amazing answers to our moribund questions.
it's been lovely to catch up with you wacky kids again. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot, Doug. Thank you very much. Billy and Dom Eat the World.
You join us again in the All Expenses Spared set for another enticing episode of Billy and Dom Eat the World.
Well, Dom, what we got this week?
I'll tell you what we've got this week. We've got tuna casserole.
Why a tuna casserole?
Well, this came to us from the lovely Doug, our fantastic guest today.
Doug Jones.
Doug Jones grew up with a tuna casserole. Now, I think tuna
casserole. He grew up with a tuna casserole?
Yeah, that was his mum, yeah. I think his mum used to make him a tuna casserole. Now, tuna casserole, I think, around the world is made in different ways because the tuna casserole that I might have had as a kid had maybe more of a tomato-y vibe to it. And this is more of a mushroomy vibe.
Yeah, it's mushrooms. And Should we try it? Seems to have crisps on the top.
Crisps on the top. This is made for us by Johnny Clues.
It's got peas in it.
But from a recipe from Doug Jones. Let's have a little bite.
Are we going for it?
Yeah, why?
That's a big bite.
Thank you.
Oh, it's fresh,
isn't
it?
Fresh. Thank you.
I wasn't quite expecting it to be as fishy.
It's tuna, is it? Yeah, clues in the title there. Are you saying that the tuna might be off?
Maybe. Is it,
it's Johnny's tuna.
Do you say tuna or tuna?
I say tuna, but yeah. In the States they say tuna.
I wasn't sure if English people said tuna.
I say tuna. Tuna. So, in the States, you have to order a tuna fish sandwich, don't you?
Is that what you say if you...
Tuna melt. Because I notice you in restaurants, you say water.
I do say
you
water.
You don't say water.
No, because I don't know what I'm saying then.
No.
And I do say tuna as well.
Tuna, do you really?
Yeah.
Do you not? No, I'd say tuna and just have them figure it out.
All right, let me have another.
It's got peas in this.
Now that I know that it's fish, I'll have another go.
I'll tell you a lovely quote from Confucius about peas. Do you want to hear it?
Oh, I love to hear that, no.
Man, this is Confucius. Man who cooks carrots and peas in the same pot is unhygienic.
Tell me something. Oh,
what happened?
I don't know if that pea started in my plate or yours.
Well, that's a shame. In that case, we'll just hurtle it.
Right. Tell us something about a tuna casserole. Oh, that was nice, that bite
was
I had
it?
There.
Well, yeah. It says here, you might assume that the tuna casserole, or tuna casserole, was a post-World War II invention of Middle America. But you'd be wrong. The first published recipe for noodles and tuna fish on casserole was penned by Mrs. W.F.S. of Kenwick, Washington, and printed in a 1930 issue of Sunset Magazine. Wow.
I'd love a copy of that. Carry on.
Mrs. W.F.S. made a white sauce for her creation. But beginning in 1934, Cook simplified the recipe by substituting that new product from the Campbell's Soup Company, the classic cream of mushroom soup.
Oh.
Andy Warhol loved a cream of mushroom soup, didn't he?
He painted it and everything,
Dom. He painted it. He loved tomato soup. He loved all soup.
Yeah. And he was one of the first artists that said, you know, if you liked his photograph or his painting, he said, I like that, but, you know, I want to hang it in my room. But my room's red and that's green and it wouldn't go. You say, I'll do it for you in red.
I'll do it for you in red. That'll be $350,000.
It'll be $350 million now.
Mm, you'd pay for it.
I'll have one more gullet of this.
Andy Warhol is famous, attributed with the saying, everyone will be famous for 15 minutes.
That's true.
And I wonder if Andy Warhol was around nowadays, he would be more closely attributed with a phrase such as, everyone will be cancelled at some point in their life. Because it does seem like that's what's happening. At some point, everyone becomes cancelled.
Well done.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
You're living an interesting time. I'm not going to cancel this tuna casserole. That was good.
I'll tell you what, John's done a good job. Yeah. Sure. I'll give you a little bit more on the tuna casserole.
Yeah, give us a blurb.
Yeah, really?
Tasty, yes. Have that.
So she's added the cream of mushroom soup.
She has, yeah.
Then Ellen Brown, no relation to Helen Evans Brown,
yeah,
entered the scene. She is the founding food editor of USA Today and a prolific cookbook author. In 2012, she published Mac and Cheese, 80 classic and creative versions of the ultimate comfort food.
80?
According to NPR, that's National Public Radio, right between the recipes for sherried mac and cheese and Mayan chipotle chicken mac is a recipe for, yes, you guessed it, tuna noodle Casserole.
Wow. Casseroles became popular in American households in the 1950s, mainly because the ingredients were cheap and easy to find in the supermarket. A can or a tin of tuna, as we would say, a can or a tin of vegetables, a tin of soup, a package of egg noodles becomes a prepared dinner in about half an hour. Tuna casserole can also be frozen or refrigerated and then reheated to be eaten the next day. It might be one of those things that in cookery class, or what we would call home economics class as a kid, they might say, just bring in these raw ingredients and we'll turn it into a lovely, tasty, nutritious meal. There's mushrooms in there, and you love mushrooms, don't you?
I tell you, that's very tasty, Dom. And I think with Doug Jones, I think it's just from the Midwest that this is a meal that they would have quite a lot. And it's not something I'd have grew up with.
No.
Would you have this?
No.
But I think it's really delicious. Mm. And so what did you make in home economics? What sticks in your mind?
Well, we did the obvious, chocolate crispy cakes. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, simple thing, wasn't it?
Simple. I remember making a quite revolting sausage meat plat.
Sounds awful, that.
It was awful. It was just sausage meat, and then they made you plat pastry on top of it. But I don't really like sausage meat, and I wouldn't eat plats at the best of times. You know what I mean? So we did that. Scones, of course. What about you?
Cinnamon toast.
You'd hate that, wouldn't you?
Basically, you made toast and then sprinkled cinnamon on it.
Shite.
And then we made shortbread. And the shortbread was absolutely fantastic. Mm. And I used to make it at the house afterwards for maybe a year. Mm. And then I probably didn't make it for about 20 years. And I thought, I'm going to try and make shortbread again.
Right.
And I can't make it now.
Yeah.
It's shite.
Now, there's this thing called the internet.
Yeah, I've went on there.
You'd put in something like, for the sake of argument, shortbread recipe.
Yeah, I've tried it, Dom.
Really, still don't work.
But when I used to make it from home economics, it was absolutely delicious. And people would say all around,
oh, your shortbread.
Oh, your shortbread's lovely. So neighbours, Mrs. Dugan from Two Doors Down, and also the Swan family.
The Swans.
Would all say, Billy, your shortbread is probably the best I've ever tasted. And now I can't muster it at all.
Were they nice, the Swans?
The Swan family.
You never had to tell them to wind their neck in.
Once, I was sitting at the top of a bus, about the 80s sometime, number 51 bus back from the town, and one of the Swans was behind me, and he was kicking the back of my seat.
Why? What had you ever done to him?
Nothing.
Did you throw him some bread?
No. I didn't know it was him when I turned around and went, oh, it's you. And he went, yeah.
Oh, was he just trying to say hello?
Yeah, I think so, but I was getting the fear.
Right.
I thought somebody's behind me kicking the seat here.
Right, and you're only a little lad.
I was only small.
Me too.
But it was one of the Swans.
Right.
So, tuna casserole, Tom.
I finished mine. Look at that.
You really went through that, Dom. Is that your dinner for tonight?
It might be. I raced through it. I'll tell you something
else.
John,
you did good there.
I'll tell you something else.
That's really tasty.
It's fantastic, John. You fed us up. While there are countless variations on tuna casserole, historically, it's made with egg noodles, chopped onion, shredded cheddar cheese, frozen green peas, which become less frozen as they get cooked, canned drained tuna, condensed cream of mushroom or cream of celery soup, sliced mushrooms, crushed potato crisps or chips. John chose salt and pepper crisps, which I think is a nice
That's a lovely
addition because you don't have to put salt and pepper on it. The cooked noodles, onion, cheese, peas, tuna, soup and mushrooms are mixed in a baking dish with the potato crisps and more cheese sprinkled on top and then baked. Gas mark 4, 365 degrees for 12 minutes. I don't know, I just made that up. But it was lovely. And it can't be that bad for you. I mean, it's veggies. Some fish, you're going to finish yours too.
It's really delicious. And I wonder if you get, would you go to a fancy restaurant and they do a fancy version of this?
Maybe.
You know what I mean? Made from scratch, noodles.
Maybe they'd put some truffle oil in there or something.
I don't know if it would be any better than this.
No, it's great. I like stuff that, you know, simple.
Let's give it some scores then.
Really?
Yeah.
Scores. Well, we're going to start with flavor and or taste.
Yeah.
It was great. I would describe it as a hearty meal, maybe even a comfort meal. If it's cold outside, like it's a little bit cold today in LA,
yeah.
You come home, if you've got a fire, you put it on, put a cozy movie on. I'm going to give it 7.9 out of 10.
That's quite good. Mm. So you'd be sitting there watching The Boy in the Bubble
with John Travolta.
Eating this. Now, I'll just get a couple of facts from John first. I need some thumbs up or not. Is this tin tuna?
Yeah. Tin tuna.
Is it frozen peas? Yeah. And mushroom soup from Campbell's?
Yeah, right.
Now I'm going to give it...
Before you give it some scores, I'm just saying here, you could adapt any of those things, couldn't you? You could add your own fresh mushrooms of a different type. You could add any different type of creamy soup. Maybe make your own pasta. I think you could do a kind of quality, classy tuna casserole.
That's what I mean. But I mean, and then use like... A piece of tuna and like, and do it all. This is really good.
I know.
I'm giving it an 8.7.
Oh, you liked it.
Yeah, I did.
Aesthetics. Now, it was nice when it was in the little tuna casserole baking dish because it's got a kind of crunchy, crispy topping on it with cheese and stuff. I mean, it's not going to change the world in terms of its looks.
It's not the most beautiful thing.
No, it's not the Paul Newman of casseroles. No. It's more like the... I don't know, the
Paul Rudd?
No, he's really sexy.
Is he?
It's the Peter Falk of casseroles. Columbo.
Oh, what's the problem here?
It's that guy.
I got one more question for you.
One more question.
One more question.
Were you the guy that killed the guy?
I'm going to give it...
Go on.
I'm going to give it a 5.9.
I see what you're doing, Dom.
It's fine.
I think the crispy thing on top, though, really... I mean, it gets your juices going.
Oh, yeah.
Gets your juices going. So I'm going to have to give that a 7.7.
Okay, 7.7. Usefulness. Can you take it to a football game?
Not really.
You couldn't put it in your pocket, could you?
Nah. You don't want to open it up on a flight. Anything with fish, you shouldn't really bring on a plane.
I'll tell you what it's useful for.
Go on.
If you get invited last minute to a dinner party, and they say, you just bring a course.
What would you call that here?
I don't know. Late minute dinner party?
No, when you bring stuff.
Bring along party.
Like, I'm having a party, but I'm not going to cook anything. Yeah. It's a...
cheap party.
It's a bring your own, and it's called something in America. Johnny!
Party for cheapos.
What's it called when you get invited to something, but everybody has to bring some food or something?
Hang on.
A what?
Potluck.
Yeah,
potluck. A potluck party. So someone says, last minute, we'd love you to go into our potluck party. Someone's doing a starter, someone's doing a dessert, someone's doing a cocktail. Would you bring one of the mains? You say, I've got it. Simple. Straight down to the supermarket. 5 or 6 items. Done.
Tuna casserole as made by Mrs. WFS of Kenwick, Washington.
Yeah. So I think it's useful for that. Is it ever a side dish in Thanksgiving or is it not a side dish? It's not. We're getting a shake of the head there now.
No, it's just a thing that you eat and it's easy.
Yeah.
I mean, but it's not useful. You're not going...
You can't make an ice cream out of it or cake.
It is what it is.
It's what it says. It's exactly what... Like Andy Warhol, it's exactly what
it's exactly what it is. It'll last for as long as it will.
You can freeze it. You can refrigerate it.
You can freeze it. You can refrigerate it. You can eat it.
You can eat it.
But that's basically it. You're not going to say, I'm going to make this into something else. I'm going to deconstruct it.
No, you're not.
No, you're going to eat it.
You could do a posh version of it. I'll give it that. I'm going to give it a 6.3.
Dom, I'm going to agree with you on the 6.3.
That was another episode of Billy and Dom Eat the World. If there's anything that you grew up with, or maybe there's a recipe that you make yourself that you're very fond of, or a drink you want us to try, or... maybe there's something that you don't particularly like and you want to see if we might feel differently about it. Get in touch with us. Billy and Dom Eat the World at somewhere. Yeah, just a place. Just write.
Just write to us at thefriendshiponion@castmedia.com with all your ideas. Dom, lovely stuff. Well, here we go. We've still got some music to listen to, Dom.
We do. We've got to find out if we think that the song is funky for you or funky for him or funky for us.
Now, could you introduce the song, please? Artist and name.
The song put forward by the lovely Doug is Melissa McCartney's Through the Eyes of Love. And I'll read you... Whoa.
Okay, wait a minute.
I'll read you just a little blurb here just before we get going.
If you could, Dom.
An Academy Award and Golden Globe Award nominated ballad. I love a ballad. I love a ballad.
I enjoy a ballad.
Performed by American singer Melissa Manchester from the soundtrack of the 1978 film Ice Castles. Here we go.
Please don't let this feeling end. It's everything I am, everything I want to be.
What's going on? I can
see. What's happened?
It's all right, Tom. Sorry. See, that's lovely, that.
But just hearing the first line. You
just
don't know
even
what,
that. You don't know what's happened.
Well, should I tell you about the film? Through on, the John. Eyes of Love.
When was it?
1978. You should have seen this. You would have. How old were you?
I'd have been 10 years old.
Oh, it's probably too adult for you.
Oh.
But Through the Eyes of Love, the song, is featured during the climax of the film as the song, Lexi. The song? Or the character, the song. The song is played by a human. That seems strange, John, that the lead character in a film is a song. Wow, this is a surreal film. And the song was played by Lynn Holly Johnson, who is a human. So a song goes skating, it says here. This is getting really bizarre.
Isn't it?
Goes skating to its first competition as the song has become blind due to a skating accident. Now, hang on a second. Let's just unpack this. So a song gets sung. Due to being on skates previously to the accident, she became blind.
Yeah, and a blind song.
And she went skating again during the film. So would a song skating, is that just like a couple of quavers in a pair of ice skates? Is
we don't know, Dom. We just don't know.
You'd have to question her choices as well. If she's already become blind due to a skating accident and then she goes skating one more time. What a strange film.
Strange. There's a lot of strange films with that. As soon as that music started, do you know what movie it reminded me of? The Boy in the Bubble.
Now, what's that about?
It was an actor you'd know, Tom.
Oh, really?
John Travolta.
Oh, really?
And he played a character
in a bubble
who suffered from a terrible, terrible.
It was like a condition, skin condition.
Dom. If he was just out and about,
yeah,
breathing in the air that we all breathe. He'd come down with all sorts.
Well, how did they know that? Did he initially, as a baby?
As a baby, they were like...
He wasn't born in a bubble, was it?
No, but they said, he can't go out and about.
Hang on a second, get him in a bubble.
Get him in a bubble and he'll have to live in there.
So, but in the bubble, he's fine.
In the bubble, he's all right because he's not out and about.
Did he go to school? Did he have mates?
Well, the school came to him, you see. But the girl next door...
Small school, isn't it?
The girl next door, who was a real girl, not a song, she would come and visit...
Right, they were mates. Yeah.
They were always in the bubble, but I think he came out the bubble at one point, but...
Was it to kiss her?
I think he came out to kiss her, but it didn't go well.
Was the scenes where they'd be like...
Oh, they'd touch each other through the bubble. And that song would have been good in The Boy in the Bubble.
Mm-hmm. I've never seen The Boy. How old was John Travolta-ish at that point? Was it after...
19.
So it's after Grease?
No, before. He did Grease when he was about 32.
Yeah, he did.
He was supposed to be a senior.
So it was when he was having a relatively successful television career.
I think it was probably his first movie.
Wow. The Boy in the Bubble, a great song by Paul Simon, but I think about a different thing. Oh, hang on. Here comes Johnny Clues to tell us that it probably wasn't a story about a song going skating. But go on, John.
John's about to say something. Here we go.
The interesting point that Doug's other recommendation for a song was Night Fever.
Oh,
from Saturday Night Fever, John.
By the Bee Gees.
I think Doug likes those kind of movies, you know. As he said, he wants to be in a Hallmark Christmas movie. And both in those movies, you just want to watch them on a Sunday afternoon, don't you?
Yeah, you do.
That kind of movie.
You ever think, I wonder if the Bee Gees ever just felt kind of silly in the studio? Do you know what I mean? They all get together.
All right, lads.
All right, how you doing? Good. What did you last night? Nothing, just hang out. Should we just go in the studio?
Yeah, let's try it through once.
Open body, moment the light. Like, that's not how they speak, is it?
I don't think so.
And the thinner one, the diminutive one of mm-hmm. the Bee Gees, he could go really high if he needed them to.
Yeah. They've got a couple of songs out that only dogs listen to.
Yeah.
You know?
They have sung some absolute classics. I know a lot of people love the Saturday Night Fever soundtrack. And
I do.
It's a film that's not aged terribly well, to be fair.
Yeah.
But they did also write the absolute classic, How Deep Is Your Love?
Well, it's quite deep.
It's deep, all right. Another little bit of trivia here about this song, Through the Eyes of Love. Despite not being a big hit, it is considered a classic among Melissa Manchester fans for her vocal delivery and has achieved a cult following over the year. It has been a frequent opening song at weddings, especially in the early 1980s, and Melissa Manchester has usually included the song on her live shows. Now, I went to your wedding, but I remember almost drowning in a bowl of tomato soup. I was so drunk. Do you remember that? You had to keep pulling me by the back of my head up out of it. That, and I kept falling into it.
And we've got a lot of photos of the party, you know, afterwards. And there's points where you are the only person dancing.
I did enjoy a really good dance that night. It was a great wedding. But did you have a opening dance number? Because your wife was a dancer, wasn't she? She's quite
we did have an opening. Can you remember what it was?
I told you I was blind drunk.
Ah, that's true. It was actually Dean Martin.
When the moon hits the pie like a big lemon sky, it's pouring.
Wasn't that one? Have another go.
I really should go.
Oh, you shouldn't go. Have a kiss in a row, but it's raining outside.
Is it that?
No, it wasn't that one either.
I'm out of ideas. Because you love Dean Martin. You prefer him to Frank Sinatra.
I do. And I was hoping you were going to get it because I can't remember the song.
Wow, you do that to me sometimes.
Yeah, I know, I do it to you a lot, actually.
You can't remember the opening dancing number to your wedding.
No.
I don't think your wife listens to the podcast. She shouldn't listen to this.
She's got no interest in me.
She shouldn't listen to this one. That's upsetting.
Wait a minute, hold on.
I mean, it's a romantic Dean Martin song.
Yeah, it's good. Something about... Ain't that a kick in the head?
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, I got it. I nailed it.
Good for you.
Ain't that a kick in the head?
Ain't that a kick in the pants?
Right. Was it funky, Dom?
Well, this is what I... Oh, my mic's going very strange. Are
Don't
we
worry
still
about
picking it up?
I thought you were doing that with your voice. I thought
Don't
it was
worry.
Good, Dom.
It was in and out, in and out, in and out. Much like your wedding night. I did like it, and what I really enjoy about this particular song was, for me, I don't need it to be funky. Of course, if it's Stevie Wonder or Prince or Sly and the Family Stone, that is classically funky. But I like songs that people think, you know what, it is funky for me.
Yeah.
That's why I like
That's it.
So I love the fact that Doug said that. I would have liked to have heard more. And you know what, on the drive home, especially if it's raining in LA, I'm going to drive home and I'm going to start weeping.
I bet you will.
Yeah.
And when you start weeping, you start sweating.
I do. I do sweat when
you
I cry.
You sweat and weep.
I also sweat when I eat apples. And if I eat too much sugar, I have to put my finger up my bum. Welcome to my world. Was it funky for me?
Was it?
On a level of Brahms to Prince, I'm going to give it a... I'm going to give it a Climie Fisher level of funk.
Climie Fisher?
1980s band.
Brilliant.
Thank you. What about you?
Well, if you're doing a 1980s man, I'll do a
Don't say Flock of Seagulls.
I'll do a Danny Wilson.
Oh, lovely choice. Yeah. I might listen to Danny Wilson on the way home.
Yeah, you'll enjoy that.
Well, that was a lovely funky for you song and we've run out of time.
Hey, Doug was brilliant.
Fantastic stuff, Tom, don't you think?
He's a really interesting guy, right? Because, you know, he's clearly defined a lot of his career by his amazing grasp of, you know, his physical body, but also has become so well-versed and adept with working with what sometimes can be very tricky. The whole prosthetics thing can sometimes trap your performance or hide your performance. And it's almost as if Doug's worked out a way to have it be a springboard to a higher level of what he's trying to do, you know.
And now it's taken them all the way to Star Trek. Oh, if only, Dom, if only. Anyway, that's us done for this week. Now, if you do have any questions, please write them to thefriendshiponion@castmedia.com. Or if you have anything you'd like to say and like us to hear your lovely voice, then send that to speakpipe.com/thefriendshiponion.
Yeah. Make sure you check us out on YouTube. We always like reading the comments. So if there's anything that you want to say about the episode or anything you want us to have a think about, leave those comments on YouTube. You can also let us know if there's any particular food or beverage item that maybe you grew up with, or maybe was a popular thing in your family. Maybe we'll eat that on Billy and Dom Eat the World. It's been a couple of weeks now since we've done a riddle or a tongue twister, and we are massive fans of both of those things. So send them in and maybe we'll feature them on the show. And we'll see you next week.
See ya.
Toodles.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.